A Week in Review.
That is right. Welcome. I'm Michelle Mendoza. Get ready. It's time for That Week in Review. It's the My Michelle Live podcast.
My Michelle Live.
Hey. Well, yes, it is. Welcome. As we look to the weekend, we are getting into some of the big news stories of the week. And oh, there's some crazy ones. This is why podcasting freedom of speech is so important, because you, my friend, are only hearing part of the story, and it's getting weirder. It used to be kind of weird. We'd scratch our heads and go, yeah, no. Now it's just getting even weirder. So you're going to hear some more of the story as we do go into a week in review with the Riz Report.
Let's review the week. The Riz Report with Adam Ruzzieri.
Adam Ruzzieri, hey, how you doing?
Boom. Yep. Hey, doing all right over here. Got the Riz Report on My Michelle Live. I love it.
Yeah, let's do it, man. There's been a lot of news that affects all of us. Okay. We've all been affected by lockdowns, shutdowns, masks, all of this, right? Financially, emotionally. And yet now here we are a year and a half later. And there's two big news stories and a lot of press that has hit the news. When the press has become the news, you know there's a problem. But let's start with what we were talking about on Thursday's News and Views podcast, if you've been listening. If not, go to mymichellelive.com and check it out. Thousands of private emails from the U.S. Infectious Disease Chief Anthony Fauci showed that there was more than concern and confusion at the start of the pandemic. You know, we all know that. But we saw in his emails, even though we're still wearing masks in many states, he said, you know, store-bought masks are not really effective in keeping out the virus. It's small enough to pass through the material. Well, we've known that, but we've shut that down. If you post that on Facebook, it'll be blocked out. If you post a meme, you won't be able to see it or access it. Anything of that nature, absolutely canceled. Saw a loved one that was upset because her daughter came home with a mask that she found at school, and it's a no mask mask. And if you hold it up to the light, you can see through it. You can breathe. Who sends their kids to school like that? Well, what's the difference, according to Fauci, Adam?
What is the difference? I mean, it's kind of crazy. Like, according to his emails, these masks don't really do anything anyway. I know that during the
N95
mask, which is the mask version that apparently can block viral material, the small little viruses that might be traveling in the air. I was walking around with just like the regular old mask that you might see at a dental, you know, at the dentist, right? The same thing a dental hygienist might be wearing. I did see people walking around in those masks that were like almost a craft project, you know, kind of homemade masks. Someone grabbed some fabric.
I think someone pointed out to me, was it maybe Alyssa Milano or something that was, you know, shaming people for not wearing masks. And she made her own crocheted mask.
Right. The crochet. Right. And then there were like these different layers of fashion or different levels of fashion in the world of masking. You know, I think there was this one singer, what's her name? Pop star, right? And she had a mask that was literally like there were holes all through it. It was kind of the same idea as like mesh, right? It was kind of like this mesh mask. I've seen people with like glitter masks. I've seen masks with different like statements on them, almost like a t-shirt with a statement. I've really sort of been like the mask rebel, because I hate the idea of a mask, because I just don't like being made to do something that I know is actually not doing anything at all.
Not only totally that, but I have a mask called my immune system.
Well, I created the mask bikini. How about that, Michelle? Your immune system. Oh my gosh. You know, like as a kid, it's like for parents, right? Like kids, get outside, play in the dirt, you know, build up your immune system. I mean, that's what your bodies are for. That's what bodies do. You know, they fight bacteria and diseases.
The sickest kids. The sickest kids are the most sterile kids. You have a kid who is there gnawing on his dad's shoe, which I can't even imagine. Yeah, but I've seen it. Kids never sick. You know, it's called an immune system for a special reason. You know, and masks can have their place. Man, I'm going to tell you, this is coming from a germaphobe, Adam. I'm the person who will use a scarf or my coat or put my my head to open public doors. You know, I don't mind masks. Why not? I don't want to catch your crap. But according to this email from Fauci, store-bought masks are not really effective for keeping out the virus, which is small enough to pass through material, quote unquote. Now, you think about that for a little while. So why masks? Just to give you something to feel better. That's a tactic often used by governments in the past to placate the people. Makes you feel like you're doing something. It's smoke and mirrors. And that's not the only email. There was an email.
Well, in that email, Michelle, that you're talking about real fast before you move to the next one.
Sure.
In the email that you're talking about also, he literally says verbatim, quote, money is best spent on medical countermeasures such as diagnostics and vaccines, not masks. I mean, not masks, right?
Yeah. So, now the email, the other email I wanted to refer to is from the director of the country's largest biomedical research facility. And in that email, he suggested the unusual features of the coronavirus, and that these unusual features may indicate it's engineered. Okay, so that was something at the beginning, and now since then, a year and a half later, we've had nothing but these conspiracy theorists of the Wuhan laboratory. That was debunked. We'll talk about how the media played into that in just a moment, but now we're starting to hear about it again. Why is it this dead horse that was heavily guarded and refused to be beaten is now running amok like a wild stallion? Well, a classified U.S. intelligence report said three researchers at the Wuhan laboratory were treated in hospitals back in November of 2019 before the big outbreak. Three of these researchers were treated for the coronavirus just before it started infecting humans in Wuhan. So how did these lab workers get it? And they say, oh, yeah, it came from the market. They were all at the market at the same day. I don't know.
Bat, right?
Yeah. They were all eating the same bat. You know, they were doing the Ozzy Osbourne thing.
Should I have different bologna that day? Wrong food.
So now our U.S. President Joe Biden has announced an urgent investigation that's going to look into the theory as a possible origin of the disease. That's huge. Now, all of a sudden, it's posh to talk about it. Facebook has turned back the tide once they banned everything that talked about the Wuhan laboratory. Now they're saying, well, we're gonna change that now. These arbiters of ultimate truth who know all that is truth, you know, they're up there talking to God or something, and you know, they have exclusive rights to truth. Now all of a sudden, that may not have been as true as truth is. So we're going to talk about how that falls into the media category. But there's one more story, Adam, and that's Dr. Fauci revealed and defended in a testimony in front of our own politicians that there was a modest and very respectful funding of this infamous Wuhan laboratory. He said that at least $600,000 was sent to the lab through a nonprofit called Eco Health Alliance. So now suddenly,
so we're paying for that.
$800,000 was allocated. Only $600,000, modest and very respectful. this is crazy. So, and by the way, before
several small businesses that were forced to shut down.
Come on.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. I mean, a little modest $600,000. Thank you, Fauci. But this was after he had already admitted that no funding. No, we're not involved there. And now there's an involvement. It was to study the coronavirus and its association with bats. We have these three workers. So now it's all of a sudden posh. And you pointed out to me earlier, I can't wait to share this as you're listening right now, that the Washington Post is now walking back and changing their past headlines. We can just edit history now.
The same Washington Post that's owned by Jeff Bezos. So the Washington Post edits a 15-month-old headline that claimed that the COVID-19 lab leak theory was already debunked. Now, this is kind of crazy to me because here they're sort of going back into history with the power of hindsight and revising their headlines. Now, these are headlines that they use to influence public opinion. These are headlines that they use to drive sentiment around certain issues and certain needs. And in respect of this particular headline, they were basically kind of pointing to Tom Cotton, and who was basically, they say, repeating this coronavirus conspiracy theory that was, quote, already debunked back in February of 2020. I look at some of Fauci's emails, and the dates are about the same, which is kind of funny. They updated their headline to go from saying a coronavirus conspiracy theory that was already debunked to Tom Cotton keeps repeating a coronavirus fringe theory that scientists have disputed. So that's a big change from saying Tom Cotton keeps repeating a coronavirus conspiracy theory that was already debunked to keeps repeating a coronavirus fringe theory that scientists have disputed. So from already debunked to fringe theory that has been disputed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big difference, right?
That's one, going back and changing a headline instead of correcting it. Look, if you don't wrap your head around this for a little bit, think of how the media has worked in the past and should work. You print something, it's erroneous. You print what is called a correction, right, Adam? A correction. Absolutely. You go back and say, well, now that there's new evidence, this is mostly debunked or it's been disputed by scientists, but there are some new evidence which leads credence to a little more investigation. You print a correction. You print a new headline. You don't go back and edit so you don't look like the fools that you are.
Well, it's a real shame, you know, because the headline that came out, or not the headline, but the words that were being spoken by Tom Cotton were words that were in agreement with information coming from the world's most prominent virologists. There was a Rutgers University professor of chemical biology.
Yeah.
I remember in the school days, those kids that were in biochem became doctors and engineers, really smart people. This is a guy who literally pointed to the Wuhan lab theory and said that this is a hypothesis that cannot and should not be just easily dismissed based on the information at hand. This is a hypothesis that must be explored. And go figure, here we are today realizing that this type of virus could have only come from three laboratories in the world. One of them happens to be in Galveston, Texas, which is kind of scary. The other one right there in Wuhan. Maybe we should look at Wuhan.
Yeah,
nah, already been debunked. Nah, don't even look. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. Move right along, people. Cancel. Take it off of Facebook. But this is,
it's so par for the course.
It is indeed, and this is,
it's
not
par for the course.
This is not something that is just small news. This affected the entire planet. There have been not only COVID deaths that maybe we could have known more about if we would have gotten to a little more of the truth or been willing to look into it, Adam. But there were deaths that were secondary related, people who couldn't get in to get the medical attention that they needed because of fear of COVID, who died. There's death by suicide and despair. There's been a loss of finances, businesses, you know, many of us
huge loss.
Drive down the streets and see the Michelle, casualties.
School districts around our country are reporting just double and triple suicide numbers this year versus years in the past.
Kids,
teenagers who already are, Exactly. Kids who we were talking about mental health of children with social media and the fact that the way they perceive long-term repercussions and consequences, the prefrontal cortex of their brain isn't fully developed until they're 25. They don't necessarily know what they're doing, but they know that they feel isolation. They know that they feel despair in some cases. And a lot of it is because of the messaging that's coming through, the fear that they're being forced to live in, the masks that they're being forced to wear, even though the masks don't do anything.
And so when you think about these Fauci these secondary himself losses, said I mean, that.
Oh my goodness.
And forget about
exactly, for, exactly. And then also, about well, the let's big, look forward, Michelle.
Let's forget about the big ticket items, the deaths and all of that. What about the loss of the division that's gone on amongst us? The people like going into a store, a friend of mine just going into up here in Seattle. Admire, she's in the store and a woman is angry, you don't have your mask on, and in her face, and you know what, we lost all civility.
Oh, and yes, you're talking about the camera Karens, right? Like the people that see someone without a mask, then they bust out their phone, they start recording that person. Yes. Like, I got you on camera, oh my gosh, where's your mask? I mean, those are the camera Karens, and they will they will chase you, they'll get you. And what I've seen is some of those people that are being chased by the camera Karens, they do kind of the opposite of what they should do. They'll start to like fake cough on the person who's chasing them. I mean, like wage bio warfare on the camera Karen. What is our society coming to? You're right.
Yeah. And this is where we're at right now. So the important thing is that oftentimes we report news. Okay. But when the media, as I said before, Adam, becomes the news, that's when you're going, what the heck? And the media has become the news because they play into this. They don't have a balanced approach. They don't in that report you were talking about changing the headlines, instead of giving this and that and saying, well, this is what some people are saying. This is what some scientists are alluding to. This is the concern. There, it's one-sided. You are being brainwashed. We're all being brainwashed. Am I saying this too strongly? Could I say it strongly enough?
Unfortunately, we are living in a world where the true story is that the fake news is coming from the news. The media, when they are the news, is the problem. Looking at the Washington Post, for example, I mean, one thing that I look back on is how they reported the death of the leader of ISIS, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. I remember his obituary headline called the guy an austere scholar, or sorry, austere religious scholar at the helm of the austere religious scholar at the helm of the Islamic State. I looked into this guy a little bit. Scholar question mark. This guy graduated from Saddam University, which is basically a propaganda institution that radicalizes Islamists. So when I think about a scholar, right, I think of someone who pursues knowledge, who pursues exposure to various information sources, maybe somebody who didn't go to Saddam University. As a thought, I mean, that's kind of what comes to mind when I think of scholar, you know?
Well,
maybe even a religious scholar too.
Or even the phrase austere. You know, what does that really say? Not
like we're supposed to admire the guy?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? This is the Washington Post. I mean, but they're looking up, right? This is what Bezos's paper is reporting. And this is how they're reporting these kind of stories. It's not like guy guilty of the death of hundreds or thousands of people dies, right? Or terrorist leader dies. It wasn't like that. Austere religious scholar? Are you kidding me? This is our media here reporting this kind of story that way.
Yeah.
How can we even trust them?
Well, there is a continuation of this, and there's no accountability. Although you do have places like Media Research Center, which we interviewed and talked about yesterday. There are places that are trying to say, wait a minute. There are news sources out there, but you're fighting against social media, which is very powerful, politics, which is powerful, the media, the mainstream media. So it's like the woke aren't really awakened. It's more like you're going to awake and they're just lying there in stewing in their own ignorance. I'm sorry if this offends you, but if you're not getting all of the story, you're not really all that woke or informed. What are you afraid of? And what happens is that we go to the extreme, and that's something that we're seeing. People are so riled up that you were talking about the camera Karens getting in people's faces. Or taking it to the next level with outright violence and hate against people groups.
Right. Outright violence and hate, and oftentimes fueled by a misunderstanding of information or just flat out disinformation. Last week, Michelle, you and I were talking about the implied truth effect and how people, when they don't see one of the fake book fact checkers, if there's not a fact check on a certain comment or post, you just assume that it's real. And so if you see somebody calling Michelle a terrible person and there's not a fact check by it saying, actually, we've met her, she's really nice, you just assume that that random person's comment is real and it's a fact. And so, you know, thinking about the implied truth effect, and this came from a study from MIT, hopefully the good academics at MIT, but when you read some of the things that are spewing through Twitter and spewing through Facebook, and you're realizing that there is no fact check on it, there is no credibility or truth behind the actual post itself, what we're seeing now is actually a rise in violence towards Jews. There's a wave of anti-Semitic violence right now taking over our country in respect for really and following the Israel conflict in Gaza. So we're seeing waves of crime in LA, New York City, Miami. This anti-Israelism like sentiment is really kind of becoming synonymous with anti-Semitism, and violence is the result. A couple of weeks ago in Seattle's Westlake Park, there were Jews that were attacked by Antifa. You literally had people being beaten by the Palestinian flag. The Israel flag was being burned. Literally pro-Israel protesters were being labeled as white supremacists, which is just absurd. It's absolutely absurd. I was kind of following the notes of this guy from Los Angeles, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, and he was arguing that the way social media is right now, social media is selectively censoring certain types of messages, and it's selectively allowing other types of messages to flourish. It's not just allowing the truth to be what it is. So the implied truth effect, when you see terrible things being posted, you just assume it's true. And so we're seeing really celebrities, actresses, business leaders, woke academics posting things to social. There is no fact check on it. So the public sees it as true. And now the result, we are seeing violence against Jews and pro-Israel people. The Rabbi Cooper was basically saying, he was calling for the refunding of police because they need protection right now. We were talking about violence against targeted groups. There was a wave of violence by a lot of the BLM supporters on Asian Americans just months ago. Now we're looking at the same thing against those who are in support of Israel. It's absolutely shameful. I really have a lot of fear for kind of where we're going, Michelle.
It's heart-wrenching to see that we not only have a short memory where history is concerned, the internment of thousands of people because of their Jewish heritage. I mean, gassed, tortured, put to death, starved, worked to death. And now we're heading down that road again. Antifa, who says they're anti-Nazi, are the biggest Nazis, but it's the mainstream aspect of it that bothers me. Antifa, I've talked about this many times, Adam. You know that I'm a sports nut, and I go to every home Sounders
right?
game. Yeah, every and many of the way games. The supporter section is not just a supporter section. They are Antifa. And, you know, they're,
golly.
I've sat in amongst them. I have friends who are amongst them. And they scowl at me as I sing the national anthem. Many times I've seen them turn their back on the national anthem. They have Antifa flags and it's allowed. It's soccer. Can you just cheer for your team?
They should just like, it's like they live by the remember that game Opposite Day? Like, you know, Antifa. It's like, well, they're actually pro-fascist. I mean, not anti. It's like everything that they say they're against is actually what they live by or do. And so to see kind of just how they are using their words and their actions to try and in a very targeted way and also an organized way. They have a website, they have a logo, they have leadership, they have factions. They are way more organized than what a lot of people in big tech and big media will tell you.
Oh, we should get into that today, just how organized some of these darlings of the media grassroots movements are and how really they are hypocritical. You sent me a tweet concerning Vina Malik, the actress. Talk about an example of being absolutely fascist, ridiculous, ad Hitlerism, and yet pretending to be from the other camp.
Oh, that term, ad Hitlerism, it makes me laugh and it makes me cry at the same time.
Right.
talking about Antifa, so one of the journalists who this guy is about as brave as it gets. Andy Ngo has been a target of Antifa now for quite some time. Antifa has put him in the hospital. He almost died in one situation. He was beaten to the point where his brain was swelling. Andy Ngo has been forced to literally live and operate outside of the United States because anytime he's at any sort of event, he is a target and his life is truly at risk. Andy Ngo posted this thing to Twitter, and it was basically him exposing another tweet from this actress named Vina Malik, and she was posting something to her 1.2 million followers. Pretty good following there, right? 1.2 million, that's a little bit of influence. And she was quoting Hitler in response to the Israel-Palestinian conflict. Well, the words, because there's no profanity in it, but she said, "I would have killed all the Jews of the world, but I kept some to show the world why we killed them." Adolf Hitler. That is an unbelievable thing to tweet and quote, and the fact that that was allowed to exist on social media, in one respect, public forum, free speech, you know, she is exposing herself as an anti-Semite who is a terrible person for that reason. But if you were to go and try to say things that are pro-Israel, you'll be censored. So she can say what she's going to say, and some might argue that that's okay, but for those to though be able to also say, hey, that's not right. Those kind of counter messages have to be allowed to flourish on social media. As is though, you got woke big tech is not allowing both sides of the conversation to really play out. The fact is that right now you're seeing a lot of people in big tech, big media, the academic world, they are really trying to, in a lot of ways, elevate Hamas, right? They're trying to say Hamas is actually a good organization. They're not getting into the truth.
Let's review the week.
Sorry about that, Adam. I don't know where that came from.
Palestinian National Authority. We press buttons every now and then on My Michelle Live. Yeah, we have a good time.
Just for fun.
but the one thing that we cannot forget, though, is that our U.S. State Department has designated Hamas as a terrorist organization, and for a reason, because they are. So you have Hamas, who literally subscribes to actual Nazism. A lot of Hamas's early leadership literally came from the Nazi movement. Their charter reads just like Hitler's Mein Kampf. And the fact is that Hamas will not allow the people of Palestine to actually survive and thrive in peace. They don't allow free and fair elections. They don't allow any sort of actual dialogue between the Palestinian Authority and Israel's leadership. And so as a result, you have this totally different reality in the Gaza Strip versus what most people enjoy in Israel itself. There is no freedom in the Gaza Strip. Civilians are used as bullet shields. And so that's just a tragedy. And so to see people like Vina Malik and people in our public forum, the academics, the commentators as well, to see them look at Hamas and actually feel for them is ridiculous, because Hamas is basically the finger that pulls the trigger for Iran. They're getting all their weaponry from Iran. And by the way, about 30% of the 3,000 rockets they've fired so far misfire. And when those rockets misfire, they impact civilians that are actually innocent in Palestine. So in the Gaza Strip, you're having people die that are innocent because of the indiscriminate acts of violence that are being waged against people who are targets in Tel Aviv, people that are in schools and hospitals and temples and churches, grocery stores, markets. It's absolutely ridiculous. And so to see how big tech is continuing to allow the Ayatollah to spew hate in five languages, and people like Vina Malik to post things like that. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting to see.
It is.
I've kind of been trying to sort of dig into history a little bit. Well, I was just going to say, you know, I've been trying to sort of dig into history a little bit. And what I've kind of sort of uncovered is that the far left, and I'm not talking about people who are Democrats when Bill Clinton was running for office. I'm talking about the far left, people who are so far beyond our political left, our political spectrum, but they despise anybody who's or anything that's unapologetically successful based on the merit of their character, based on their hard work ethic. I believe that there was a time where today's left probably viewed Israel as a victim when they were more of a younger nation, when they were weaker, poorer, even more socialist in the late 40s to the mid to late 60s. But then Israel started to flex, right? They started to get stronger. Israel started to advance technologically. Their military got really, really strong. Israel's success today is such that they are a hub for entrepreneurship. Israel is a place where a lot of our coolest technology comes. I believe some of the image recognition software and technology that powers the awesome Tesla came out of Israeli-based research. So because they're so successful today, they are not viewed by the far left as a victim. You know, it's the critical race theory BS. You're either an oppressor or you're the oppressed, right? And right now, because Israel is strong, they are the victimizer. They are the oppressor. They have the Iron Dome missile defense system. They have one of the world's leading air force.
Yeah.
They've grown so much. And so because of that, you can't really look at them as the victim anymore, right? So they are the only other thing that exists in CRT, and that's the oppressor, right?
And yet here in America, we talk about the oppressed. We have Black Lives Matter, which has become a big movement. Black Lives Matter, Black legal groups have come out against Israel in this recent conflict with Hamas. Black Lives Matter, much the same way. While we're supposed to be there to champion the oppressed, they seem to be becoming part of the oppressors and becoming kind of a big business in the mix of things. Follow the money, people.
Oh, it's a huge business. Follow that dollar, right? Follow that paper. I mean, that's right? That's where it's at. You know, I was digging into BLM too, right? So BLM obviously has all sorts of problems with Western society, and they are supporting Hamas for a reason. And it's not because they truly hate Israel, so to speak, like not necessarily ideologically or by values. They hate everything that Western culture stands for. And when you look at BLM, just kind of from a global perspective, the fact is that BLM, I mean, they've issued comments publicly on Twitter. They've waved flags. They've beaten people that that promote Israel's cause, that promote freedom, that promote Western values in general. Michelle was talking about singing the national anthem. BLM and Tifa kind of frown on that. When you look at Israel, you might say that, really kind of looking back to religion, right? So Western culture, the heart of Western culture is Christianity. The heart of Christianity is Judaism. You know, Jesus Christ, a practicing Jew, Mary and Joseph, and the apostles worshipped in a Jewish temple along with Jesus. So to side with Hamas against Israel is to attack the heart of Western culture. And when the primary objective of Hamas is the annihilation of the Jewish state, you could argue that the primary objective of Hamas is also the primary objective of BLM, which is the destruction and annihilation of Western culture.
Wait, wasn't Black Lives Matter, just to tell people, Black Lives Matter, don't forget about us. I mean, we don't want to be treated despairingly. Wasn't that the whole point?
Well, I guess it depends who you ask, right? If you ask Patrice Cullors, it's a slush fund for really nice real estate around the world.
Eesh.
You know, BLM raised $90 million after the George Floyd death. That's a lot of cash. But you know, and we're going to get into this in just a little bit, but BLM's ugly truth is really being revealed, not so much to us who have kind of always known it, but I think to those who, you know, just as a basic statement, can agree with the fact that Black lives matter, White lives matter, Asian lives matter, Hispanic lives matter. People that can just agree with the basic statement of, yeah, I mean, those people are pretty good people. Like they do matter. Their life definitely matters. The all lives matter thing, right? I think the people that now kind of subscribe to the movement, though, are realizing that it's not what it was pitched as in their original sales presentation.
And that's what happens.
Look at it that way.
Back to the point, the moral of the story today, that's what happens when you don't have accountability. Power corrupts, ultimate power ultimately corrupts. If we're not holding accountable, Adam, if we're not able to challenge, if we're not able to say anything, and you're canceled, you're brought down, it's you're taken off Facebook, you're being taught how you may talk, how what you may say. And if there is no challenge, if there's no counter, even as ridiculous as you may think it is, then you have ultimate power and it corrupts. Boom.
And China loves it. China loves it. Russia loves it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, this is like their tool. This is their tool to destabilize everything that's great in our society. Everything that made the things that we enjoy. Levi jeans, the same Levi jeans that were trafficked into Soviet Russia that the Russians loved as contraband, because you couldn't get that in Soviet Russia. But those came from America. All the great things that come out of Western culture, the technological innovations, the freedom, the diversity of thought, the art, you know, the list goes on, right? All those great things are what are under attack. And so to BLM, you know, if you can sort of like generalize everything and get people to focus on these identity politics, well, then you might have something there if people actually buy into it. The interesting thing that I read from Victor Davis Hanson just yesterday, I think it was earlier today, and it was just this idea of imperialism and colonialism.
Okay.
And a lot of what I think BLM really tries to get people to look to is this concept of colonialism. You know, they're trying to say that basically the way that the world has evolved and the way that people have traveled over the world throughout centuries of time, that there it's literally just been sort of this cadence of victim, settler, and sort of like colonialization that has sort of deprived indigenous peoples of their culture and of their land in some cases. You know, I think about the fact that Jews have been in what is now Israel since the dawn of time, yet BLM and Hamas are trying to kind of say that, no, you know what, they just got there after World War II. They basically just came in and occupied this territory, which is just not the case. This particular region of the world has so much importance to the entire world for obviously a lot of religious reasons, but it's not like the Jews just came and took over Israel or Gaza for that matter. That's not at all what that was. They've always been there. So, you know, I think about BLM and how they're trying to sort of marginalize these groups and how they're sort of trying to make literally Israel look like an oppressor. It's just not the case, but that's exactly why they are in support of Hamas and everything that Hamas is trying to do.
When we shut down those voices, that's one area. Another area is, what are you getting in school? You know, we've talked about understanding the Nazi movement and the annihilation of a whole people group. And then we see people saying, well, we're oppressed. And yet they turn into the oppressor and utilize Hitler's own words as though they don't know history. We can talk about Israel and say, you know, this was, you want to argue about who should be there. If God gave them the land, dude, God gave them the land. Israel has every ability to wipe out Palestine. They are, as you mentioned, a powerhouse. They could wipe them off the map tomorrow, but instead they are trying to work together. Come
they are
on.
And they're also respecting human rights to the utmost degree. You know, they are doing
I'm
everything
not saying
they
they're
can.
Perfect, but well, I'm no, saying yeah. look at what's really going on here. And let me just point out, while they could wipe them off, they haven't. And if we look at history, we see that Israel has been there. We see that they have a stake. But that's the problem. The second problem, one, wiping out all communication and anything that you don't like someone saying. And two, the eradication of history. What are we teaching in schools? We're teaching social wokeism. We're not teaching real history.
Yeah, critical race theory, social wokeism, literally revising history to train people or to educate people on the BS joke of a concept that this little baby was born racist. You know what? As a baby, I didn't know I was, when I was a baby, when I was a kid, right? When I was in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, I lived in a small neighborhood in Dallas, a part of North Dallas that was developing north and kind of edging its way closer and closer to Oklahoma by the year. And, you know, I had two best friends. One of my best friends was a Mexican kid named Lance. The other best friend that I had was an Asian girl named Gabby. I didn't know that I was different. I didn't know that I was a little bit, you know, more pale, I guess you might say. I had no idea. I just knew that we played Batman and Ninja Turtles. I knew that they lived a couple doors down. I knew that they had parents that loved them. I knew that, you know, they were my friends. I didn't know that there was anything different about them. You know, until society was like, hey, you guys are different and you're a different race and blah, blah, blah. To think that you're born racist is just absolutely a joke. It's a function of socialization.
It makes sense if you think that you could be born, wrap your head around this. You can be born a male, but you are really inside a female. Gender is fluid, but why isn't race fluid?
Right. Why isn't it? Well, it's, you know, first of all, human race, right? Like we're all people, we're all humans. You know, even Caitlyn Jenner is opposed to the idea that a by birth male who then becomes a trans woman, that trans woman is not going to have certain advantages on the court or in the weight room, you know, on the playing field. That's just, can you imagine Bruce Jenner, who became Caitlyn Jenner? Can you imagine Caitlyn going and competing and like in the women's freestyle or just any kind of women's event? At one point, Bruce Jenner was the best number one athlete in the world. And to think that when he became Caitlyn, that he's not going to have some sort of, or she's not going to have some sort of advantage over maybe Michelle Mendoza on the court, you know,
yeah,
or Michelle Mendoza on the track, you know, like, man, like there is a thing that you have to look to and it's nature. And when I did my 23andMe, like I read the basic information on, you know, kind of who I am and what my family background is and what my DNA kind of says about my body and what I might be inclined to from a health or cancer perspective. But I was literally, I've kind of evolved, I guess, to be sort of like the one who can open jars and the one who can carry lots of stuff for my wife. There is a strong difference there from a biology perspective. You know, women are creators. Like women can, well, what was it? The birthing person, I think, was a term that I heard come out of one of our Congress people, referring to a woman as a birthing person. That was a little bit crazy to me, but women are built differently because they are built to literally create life, which is, I think, an amazing thing. What was that Danny DeVito movie? Twins, I think. Like, me as a male, like, I will never carry a child. Like, that's just not possible. I will physically carry a child, but I'm not going to carry one inside my body and let it nourish to the point of birth. That's just not in my biology.
Yeah. You know, we have changed breastfeeding to chest feeding now because apparently you don't know what you're capable of, Adam. You could be nursing, you know, you guys have kids, you could be nursing.
What was that quote from Meet the Parents? I think it was De Niro. He's like, I think he was like, I have nipples, Greg. Can you milk me? No, he can't. It's just not a thing, man. He just can't do it.
And you know, that's but, not.
I mean, how are we going to be such deniers of science? Because it was the far left that was all about science last year, and now they're totally just denying science to their advantage.
Well, yeah, well, it's
I don't know if it's their advantage or not.
And that's not to say that as you know, I'm more of a libertarian. If you feel like you want to, Adam, you want to lipstick up and wear a dress, you know, and you feel want to get in touch with your feminine side, I'm not going to stop you. You know, as long as you're not hurting anyone, you know.
Michelle, I was a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader one time for Halloween, and I was a really ugly cheerleader. But the lipstick was there. The dress was there. I was pretty ugly, but I tried. No, but I mean, I'm with, right there with you, though. I mean, yeah, if you want to, if that's what makes you happy, I support that, you know, absolutely. But I'm not going to deny science and say that me, if I decided to become a trans woman, that I will ever carry a child. Like, it's just not a thing. I wasn't designed that way. And similarly, if I go and I compete on, you know, collegiate women's soccer, or, you know, collegiate women's weightlifting. I mean, I literally have an advantage. I think it's because I was born with natural testosterone that sort of developed my, or allowed my body to develop. I do, Michelle, have real concerns about some of those states that are making decisions for children who have not yet gone through puberty. We've obviously seen some headlines come out of Arkansas and some other states like that. But, you know, at what point is it child abuse when parents are making these decisions for the children who have not yet been able to come into their own to decide what is right for them?
Irreversible. That just gets me. It gets me. You know, here we are in Crazyville. The lunatics are running the asylum. There is no, which again, libertarian, go ahead, you know, spout your ideas, try to run with it. I don't mind. What I mind, though, is the shutting down of everything else. That is not liberty. That is not freedom. It is oppression. It is abuse. It is ignorance. It's feeding into ignorance. And how dare we sit back and think that we're so right when, as I mentioned on yesterday's program, Adam, even God in the Bible says, come, let us reason together. Test me, try me, prove me on this. You know, he praises in the Bible, the Bereans are praised because there are people that, you know, the gospel's shared with them. They're going, okay, yeah, that's all cool and everything, but we're going to go back and see if this is true, right? That's praised. If God isn't afraid of the challenges, if God isn't afraid of a little testing, if God isn't afraid to reason together and to, you know, go ahead, bring it, essentially, what is your problem?
Well, that's like what you said, I think, last week. It was like, hey, if you're gonna ask me questions about my faith, or just you're gonna try and question where I stand, please do so. Throw those questions at me because I will learn something more about myself or about what I believe in, because I'll think a little bit deeper and maybe from a different angle. Throw all those questions at me, because when you live in truth, you don't have to be afraid of whatever those answers might be. You just don't. But when you're living a lie and you're asked a lot of questions like that, defensive is what people become. They become defensive because they might out themselves as a fraud. And I think that's kind of what we're seeing now of BLM. A lot of people being defensive there. If you're living in a lie, you should be afraid because the truth will come out.
Yeah. And that's part of where we're at today in the news. The truth isn't coming out, but that's why programs like this are flourishing, because people want to hear more. It's out there to find. It really is out there to find. Just don't be afraid of it. So here we are in crazy world. We have come to a place where we are mishandling the truth. We're not telling the truth. And yet it is out there. And you see it for an example of the truth down there in Texas, where you're at, where you're a border state, that we're not hearing in the northern half, north of the Mason-Dixon line. You know, we're not getting it.
Yeah. You know what? Unfortunately, a lot of some of those more northern states that are not quite so close to the southern border, they might not quite get it until it hits closest to home. And one of the ways that it might hit, and this is just me looking in the crystal ball here, apart from a rise in gang violence because of the boys that will become men, the boys who are currently 12 years old, 13 years old, coming across the border with no parental supervision, no male figure, no strong mother, those young boys who are going to become men are going to come together and they're going to centralize around gang activity in some cases, and violence will be the only thing that will come from that, especially in cities that have no funding for the police. You're also going to have a drug problem that will hit America's youth, and that is going to be detrimental in the strongest ways. Here in Texas, Governor Abbott was pointing to the fact that enough fentanyl, and fentanyl is basically a painkiller that you give to terminally ill cancer patients. Fentanyl is an incredibly strong drug that is literally for people who are about to die, right? Like at the very end of life. There enough fentanyl has been picked up by Texas state troopers to kill every man, woman, and child in the state of New York. 21.5 million lethal doses have been intercepted by the troopers of Texas.
Are you kidding me?
Michelle, so when I was in college, I was I really loved the school that I went to. I was a tour guide. I made money that way. I got paid way too much for working not a whole lot of time as a tour guide, but it was a privilege to serve in that position. And there was about a 1% acceptance rate to that program, so that was kind of cool. But I was also an orientation leader for all of the incoming freshmen. And there was a freshman kid who came through, and I was one of his orientation leaders. And he was a kid that came to SMU in Dallas from a little town outside of Chicago called Naperville. This kid, his name is Jake Stiles. If you look him up, there's a lot of articles about him because of kind of the nature of his death. And that's the spoiler alert. This poor kid died. One day, I am at my fraternity house. And by this kid's sophomore year, he pledged a fraternity. And his fraternity house happened to back up to mine through the alley. And one morning I look out and I see a couple ambulances and a SMU police vehicle. And I see a stretcher being wheeled out. And it happened to be this kid that just the year prior, I was the orientation leader for, welcoming him to the university, educating him on the traditions, even the school song and some of the crazier sort of like wives tales about the school. Like there's a magic squirrel that was buried underneath one of the main buildings, Charlie the Magic Squirrel. And this kid overdosed after a night of partying with his friends on fentanyl, among a combination of other drugs, including alcohol and a little bit of cocaine. Fentanyl was the key contributor to his death. There were these lollipops that were going around the campus, and these lollipops were laced with fentanyl. So kids would literally suck on a lollipop and it looked like candy. And in reality, they were getting really high off of this drug. Typically fentanyl is applied through a transdermal patch medically by a doctor, of course. And so the kids on campus that were into this stuff were, or not into this stuff, but exposed to it just once or twice, were on this drug. And this is what's coming across the border right now in droves. Also, George Floyd, enough fentanyl was found in his body to kill a horse. So this is an incredibly powerful drug that has no place in our schools, in our neighborhoods. It has no place right now in our society. And it's crossing the border because it makes the cartels a ton of money. And I personally know someone who's died from fentanyl. And it was a tragedy. Not even 21. Whole life ahead of him. You know, actually a smart person, a very vibrant person, had sort of a Seth Rogen sort of air about him, just from a personality. You know, it's like a person that you could laugh with. And unfortunately, a bad decision was influenced by access and probably a little bit of peer pressure. Just think about what's going to come from this, right? The border, all of this stuff coming, all this contraband, all this terrible stuff coming across the border. It's going to go to our colleges, to our high schools, and God forbid it affects anybody that listens to this program. I pray and hope that it does not, but we have to be mindful of the reality that can come from this and do what we can to make sure that people are talking about it. Vice President Harris has not been at the border yet. Since being appointed border czar, I think that was 73 days ago, not been present, no press conferences. very, very little activity or attention paid towards it. But, you know, Memorial Day was just last week. Enjoy your long weekend.
And so you had mentioned fentanyl, enough to kill everyone in the state of New York. We have human trafficking. We are still wearing masks, even though Fauci's email said bought masks don't do a dang bit of good. We're vaccine shaming one another and segregating ourselves into the vaccine and the non-vaccine. People taking the vaccine are getting the coronavirus, maybe not as in droves, but it is happening. And some people are experiencing health issues and blood clots. It's a real thing. But we're not allowed to talk about it. And yet we have an open border. Who cares what they're spreading and bringing in? Does any of this make sense? No, it doesn't. But what doesn't make sense even more is the fact that we're not talking about it in the mainstream media. You have to listen to the underground podcast broadcast of people like me and check out the Riz Report every weekend. Now you're hearing it live as we record it live. It'll be podcasted this weekend, but you can always listen to the Riz Report here, where we're going to tell you the truth. We're going to tell you what's going on. We're going to give you insight into what's really happening in the world. So you can always tune in here. You can go to My Michelle Live. Go to My Michelle Live. You can connect with some of our great products. You can connect
with Adam Ruzier.
And you can watch me press buttons. connect with products. You can support us. You can like us wherever you hear it. Adam, we're out of time, but man, this was good stuff and important stuff. It really gets us thinking. And hopefully those of us who are walking around thinking that we're all woke in that might wake up to a deeper truth. One can hope, right?
One can hope. One can hope. That's why we got to fact check and dig deeper every time. And not self-censor. Shoot. Good Lord. No self-censorship. Keep talking. Keep on gabbing. Say too much. Kiss the Blarney Stone. Get that gift of the gab and just keep on doing it. Just gabber.
I like it.
Just keep on gabbering.
We'll catch you next week, Adam.
Have a great one.
4 go to mymichellelive.com.
Boom.
And that
awesome
is, as they say, a wrap. We done did it.